Blog Talk Radio.
Disabilities well into the future.
So this article goes on a bit.
Well, it says the scope of work for the two properties includes exterior and interior repairs and upgrades, small improvements to reduce the building's environmental impact, including additional insulation, new windows, etc. The Blackstone and Franklin Square House apartments are the latest of seven Boston projects that the HIT has helped finance under its Construction Jobs Initiative, creating over 1,900 union jobs in the city and more than 13,500 jobs nationally to keep union members working at a time of high unemployment in construction industry. Through this job initiative, the HIT has invested $224 million in Boston over the last 3 years, leveraging $470 million of developing activity in the city.
That's a huge investment for the AFL-CIO.
It says about the HIT, about HIT. The AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust is a fixed income investment company registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. It manages $4.4 billion in assets for more than 350 investors, which includes union and public employee pension plans. The HIT invests primarily in government and agency-insured and guaranteed family multifamily mortgage-backed securities. The HIT is one of the earliest and most successful practitioners of social, responsible, economically targeted investing, with a 45-year track record that demonstrates the added value derived from union-friendly investments. The investment objective of the HIT is to provide competitive returns for its investors and to promote the collateral objectives of constructing affordable housing and generating employment for union members in the construction trades and related industries. Since its inception, the HIT has invested over $6.4 billion to finance more than 102,000 units of housing nationwide, generating for over 70,000 union jobs. More information is available on the HIT website, which is AFLCIOHIT.com.
That's a win-win.
I think it's great.
Affordable housing for people, jobs for union members, great for investors, and it makes money for the union.
Yeah.
That's
also
great.
Also, on this, I didn't know that. There's no escape. All Facebook users will soon be forced to switch to timeline.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I thought we still had the option.
Oh, no. They just switched you over.
It's not a good news. Okay. Well, we're going to have to check that out. I have no idea what's going to happen there.
That's an excellent article.
Yeah, very good article.
And let's read what's happening in Britain as far as housing goes.
Well, yeah, that was the frightening thing that we were looking at.
Just a minute.
Let's see if I can get out of this link. There we go. They're back again. again.
These construction projects are done with union labor, employees, other employees have a living wage, and the idea is to create either affordable housing or to build commercial projects that obviously end up putting people to work when this doors and businesses open up. So it's
good
stuff.
Reading, they put in like $6.4 billion since they've started.
Nationwide.
And it's pension fund money. You know, they're fiduciary. They have a fiduciary. You know, any pension fund has a fiduciary responsibility, obviously, to plan participants to make sure that there's a pension when they retire. So that, you know, it's not like they're throwing money away or looking to waste pensioners' money. These are investments that end up coming back. You know, the return on investment is obviously high enough to warrant these projects. So, it's the positive side of capitalism when it's allowed to be shown.
It just shows great social responsibility. They just don't talk about it. It's putting union workers' money to action in an area that's very, very important.
Yep.
And sometimes,
and created tens of thousands of union jobs around the country.
And I'm glad you brought that. We've got to pursue something here and see if the governor and his office can't get on board with doing something. But, you know, again, I was struck by the representative from the Housing Investment Trust who was stationed in New Orleans post-Katrina and was getting rebuffed by local politicians in the business community down there because, you know, they didn't want to have to hire a union. They didn't want to have, any sense of a presence of unions, and that's just tragic. And
congressman said that was handling the Fifth Ward in that section. He said after the hurricane wiped out everybody, he said, "Well, it took care of our affordable housing problem."
Yes, and
that
you
took
know,
care of our affordable housing,
yeah.
Not affordable housing.
An elected official said
party
that.
Very
insensitive, man.
Yeah, you know, they. I went on a tour. One of the tours I went on and was of one of the public housing in New Orleans. A lot of it is really high quality, stock, well built. And what happened was, I think I believe this before, life with the Palestinians and the right of return. The residents of New Orleans public housing projects weren't allowed to return, and these public projects were fenced off. We could see the water line, and many of them, the water line wasn't that high. The damage wasn't as severe as the damage to homes, you know, a single scattered housing. But these residents, many of them had to flee to Texas. They were in Mississippi, and they couldn't come back. And the reason was that the corrupt politicians in New Orleans and then Governor Jindal, who's a pal of Bush, and they wanted to turn it over and make it into like a golf course and a mall. So they wanted to turn it into upscale projects.
Projects planned there too, I remember.
Right. Yeah, and it's just disgusting. I mean, just disgusting. It's like we want to keep middle and lower wage income earners, people of color, out of the homes, and put malls and golf courses in. So there you go.
Hey, did you see by any chance? Did you see the Romney's picks for vice president?
Tell me again. I know Rubio is on the list.
Yeah, but Ryan is on the list.
Jindal
is on the list. And Polenta is on the list, and Ayotti, I believe, from Maine. But Ryan, is the ultimate of ultimate, budget cutters. Rubio is I don't even know where that guy stands.
Well, it just sort of says it all. After his trip.
Trip to
the Olympics, where he insulted people, and then on to Israel, where he was so
Poland. Don't forget Poland. He pretended
and
he was
Poland.
A friend of Polish.
I asked you about that. But, well, Lessa, what the hell
was
that?
What went on there?
That was so bizarre, because what you had happening there was, what happened there was this sort of bizarre divergence where you had Lech Walesa, who has done many admirable things, obviously, and led the Solidarity Union uprising in Poland that helped break Russia. And
he's a great guy, yeah.
he endorses Romney, but really, otherwise, I think, the visit wasn't that well received by the Polish Union. So it was sort of a bizarre, just like in keeping with the whole trip, it was just very bizarre.
Did you hear that outside they had Obama and Ron Paul supporters were outside the Polish capital there when Walesa, or outside the meeting with Walesa.
Walesa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course you heard the kiss my ass comment by Romney's
right.
Press secretary.
Press guy, yeah.
This is holy ground, so kiss my ass. It's unbelievable.
I mean,
where is this guy going with this campaign?
It seems like he surrounded himself with people like himself, totally out of
worse.
But the tragic thing is that the media allows, the media allows itself to be vetted. They're so timid. The media, the mainstream media generally, such quislings who want to be, traveling in the inner circles of the candidate, that they don't do any real investigative reporting. They don't distance themselves. They want access. And it's outrageous that a campaign spokesman, tells them to kiss my ass. But, the American people, as a result, don't get an accurate picture of what's going on here.
I think people, though, Larry, pretty much get the fact that Romney is out of touch and a really unattractive candidate. Really,
I
think he, and they can't hide it. As much as they try to keep propping him up and dressing him up and putting him out, he's just not an appealing.
Right. If you saw the clips that I sent out, that wonderful political cartoon from Dave Hosey of the LA Times where, Romney's staff guy says, okay, we've got you booked on a tour where you can't make any mistakes. And Romney says, oh, good, American country clubs.
That came out about him quite a while ago, which I think kind of says it all. And he tied his dog to the top of the car.
That's
the kind of person that he is.
Well, I think he said he forgot it there. But
oh yeah, right.
It's the F. Scott Fitzgerald line, right? The rich are really different from the rest of us, and you say is entirely true and accurate. He's playing to that base. The problem is the base has a lot of power. There's a lot of manipulation going on. There's voter suppression. So even though people may recognize that Romney doesn't have their interest, I think it's frightening that this guy is neck and neck. Could very well be our next president.
Oh my God! Don't say that. Scary.
It's frightening.
That's the thing. I agree with you. Many people recognize that this guy isn't one of us. But, at the same time, with the control of the media, with all the corporate money flowing in, with the courts, everything is in his favor. As critical as I've been, certainly, of Obama and you've been, the fact of the matter is, it's remarkable that Obama actually is even with him when you consider all the things that have gone on.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing he's not even with is the likability quotient.
Right.
Likability, I guess, is that 30% for Romney and, 50% for Obama or something.
I know rich liberals, too, who have inherited money. And this is just me speaking, and I don't mean to insult anybody or your listeners, I generally never trust or have a lot of faith in anybody who inherited their great wealth. Because, you know, he didn't, you know, Bain Capital was given to him and his wealth was given to him. So he really doesn't have an understanding of anything when it comes to people having to work for a living and provide for their families. And I don't, I've always said, I said this to you, I don't begrudge great wealth, but when you inherit it, you don't know what the heck you did to get it. You know, you landed instead of a pile of you know what, you landed in gold.
That's true.
So,
luck of the drawer, I guess, huh?
I right. Did. So he's, you know, he's trying to modulate his message to say that, you know, not everybody in America can be rich, but everybody wants to be rich. And that may be, you know, that may be more accurate than we care to acknowledge.
That's probably
you know,
true. But,
people do want to live comfortably and not have to worry about how they pay their bills. So I'll give him that much, but, you know, the guy has no clue.
Since we're on the topic of politicians, I have to ask you something that's pretty sensitive. And that's about Chris Donovan.
Yep.
And I know our union endorsed him, but I'm really concerned, as I'm sure a lot of the public is, about his campaign and the number of people that are being investigated and indicted in that campaign.
Right. We certainly have had many discussions about this, but we would never in a million years change our path. I mean, this is a guy who actually, unlike most, virtually all politicians I've met, or legislators, I should say, over at the state capitol, Chris Donovan is a guy who actually cares about everyday working people and has really championed legislation that benefits everyone, whether it's the paid sick days, minimum wage. He sponsored and supported the study committee to create a hybrid pension for all workers. So I just think that, you know, it's important for people to kind of sift through the smoke and the negative campaigning. Chris himself hasn't been indicted, arrested, charged. There are people like his former campaign finance manager who have been arrested, but I just go on my gut, you know. I know Chris, and I know that he hasn't been involved with this. And I know that some bad people did some bad things. They were working on his campaign. It happens more frequently than I think, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike would care to admit. But in the end, this is a guy who stood up to the average Joe and Josephine. And I'm certainly not ready to jump ship. Our union isn't ready to jump ship. We're getting positive feedback. You know, we're in the process of doing phone banks and mailings to our members, worksite leafleting. And, you know, we're not seeing the pushback or the anger from members. And, you know, I think Chris is going to emerge and learn from this. And I think he has. He's certainly surrounded himself with some better people. And, you know, we have to and will stand by, because there are very few legislators who've championed all the causes that Chris has. I don't know if that helps answer your question or not, but that's certainly where
I know. We were wondering how to look at this. I mean, the guy's really
he hasn't said very much.
He's a heartbeat away from an indictment himself.
He's frustrated the press because he's not answered question. And, you know, that's certainly making it more difficult. You know, it's hard for him to run a campaign while he's being badgered with those questions. But, you know, I think once we can get through the primary on August 14th, then we'll see. That'll be the real measure then of his ability to run a campaign. Because, look, there ain't no doubt the Republicans are going to make this an issue. But, you know, I think that they're going to have to look deeply at themselves. I mean, you've got the Republican Senate leader calling for a broader investigation into the allegations surrounding Donovan's campaign, yet you've got House Republicans not wanting the investigation. And so, you know, people should be careful about what they say and do when it comes to claiming to, you know, to be clean. Andrew Rohrabach, the you know, the presumptive Republican nominee is, been a spokesman for a party that turned its back on Connecticut that looked the other way while Roland was doing what he was doing. So, you know,
With him, with Andrew Rohrbach, he was a from the 5th district. And let me tell you, he tells you one thing, but then he went to Hartford and did something entirely different.
I've
heard more people say that about him. You know, he tells what they think they want to hear, what he thinks they want to hear, and then does just votes his own particular agenda.
Yeah. And so, look, you asked me a question, and it's a fair question. We're not, we're hearing our members stand behind Chris. You know, when I say our members, our AFSCME Council four members. Look, we'll know what happens on August, on the night of August 14th. We'll know whether this mess, torpedoed his congressional candidacy or not, and then we move forward. I will absolutely, look forward to having a discussion with you post August 14th because, look, we'll either be doing a postmortem that this thing killed his candidacy or we'll be saying that, he surmounted it and now he's going to have 3 months of very difficult attack ads and attack tactics being directed at him. So, but again, when we do phone banks and when we call our members, we're not getting pushback. We're getting support for and belief in his candidacy, despite the allegations that are swirling around. I think people are separating the allegations from the man, and that's as it should be.
Larry, I got another question for you relating to the relating to the two strikes that are going on, the CLMP strike and the nursing home strike. Where are those right now, and what do you think is happening with those? I know they're not your union, but they're
no. Well, CLNP, they're I guess I don't know. They're technically not on strike. They have begun picketing. They're still in contract negotiations. They have not declared. Their impasse has not been declared. They haven't gone out on strike. So I do want to clarify that, but it's certainly an interesting situation to watch because, a lot of it actually isn't about the nuts and bolts of wages and healthcare. It's about the staffing levels, particularly in the aftermath of CLMP's disastrous handling of the storms.
Right.
So,
right.
They're picketing CLMP sites. And we'll have to see how that plays out. And then, but the other one is the strike that is happening is the 1199 workers who went on strike last month against Healthbridge back around the 4th, I think July 2nd. They've been out of work since July 2nd on the picket line, the CNAs, so on, dietary aids, et cetera. That's going to be a tough one. They're up against a wealthy, powerful corporation that dabbles in healthcare, and they're really trying to break the union, break the workers. And I think I mentioned to you, I'm really impressed with the resolve of the workers on the picket line, and they care deeply about it. There was an article that I had in my clippings about a reporter from the New Haven Register interviewed families whose parents are in the Milford nursing home where the workers are on strike, the Healthbridge facility in Milford. And the families are saying we're not getting the same quality of care in that we're not taking it out on the workers for going out on strike. We support we understand why they did it. I don't want to say that they support it, but patients' families understand why they did it. And they're saying that there's no way the replacement workers can do the job that the workers who went on a strike did.
That's a tough situation. It's very difficult to go on strike, and for that long period of time, a lot of the people who work in nursing homes are not making a lot of money, but they're single mothers or they're taking care of other people. Must be very, very tough for them to be on strike. And that's, these wealthy corporations count on.
Right, and that's why, in the end, you have to sort of put aside what your concerns are. It wasn't easy for the workers to go out on strike, not just for the, you know, economics of it, you know, losing their paycheck, but, you know, they feel very strongly about the patients. They understand the patients. They want to be back at work. They feel like it's their second family. And they, you know, they take seriously their jobs as caregivers. So, but this is like a for-profit corporation that's using elder care as a tool for making money. You know, it's just another profit stream for them. And this is alarming stuff. And you know, when these corporations win, everybody else loses.
How does AFSCME as a union? How do we support unions like this who go out on strike? What is it that we try to do for them to support them?
We do. I mean, look, we do a number of things, you know. And but first, I want to just say, because I am driving and I don't have the exact addresses. If you go to the 1199 website, which is www.nehcu.org, right on their homepage, they have a list of the 5 nursing homes. The most important thing in some respects is simply for people who believe in the workers and support them, you know, just go to the picket line, spend an hour. It really boosts the morale of the striking workers. They have a solidarity fund. Our union's contributed to it. I've contributed to it personally. I brought them a case of water one day when we were having the humid weather. You know, they need food, anything people can bring to the picket line, cookies, bottled water, home-cooked meal. Really, they appreciate it, but what they do appreciate the most is just other folks from the community, whether they're in a union or not, saying, hey, I'm with you, keep your chin up, keep fighting. But again, there is a solidarity fund that goes directly to help the workers get through this, and let's hope that they win.
What was the website again? You remember?
Sure, it's www.nisandnancy, e is in Edward, h is in Harry, c is in Christmas, e is in education, u is in union, nehcu.org. That's the New England Healthcare Employees Union. And District 1199, and right on the home page, they have a link that explains all the labor board charges that have been filed against this company. The National Labor Relations Board has found them guilty of several violations of labor law. There's information on where the picketing sites are and information on the Solidarity Fund. But, you know, again, if you could stop by, bring them a case of water, bring them some food if you want, or just, you know, bring yourself and say, I'm with you. That will help.
Oh, good. Do you think this is going to be a long fight?
I can't predict, and I hate to predict because, you know, strikes are difficult economic tools to use these days for unions because of the current economic climate and the weakening of labor law and labor rights. But 1199 is great union. They fight really hard for their members. They're good at, they've engaged a lot of politicians and community organizations to support. So I think it's going to be long, yes, but I think 1199 can win. Absolutely. I think that they prevail in other nursing home strikes, and the workers are really determined to prevail, and that's the most important thing. But it will take a while. In all likelihood, yes, it will take a while.
Well, they have a lot of courage.
But now the Red Cross strike, that's all over with, and that did they finally negotiate anything
I mean, we took, you know, we ended up really with what was a concessionary agreement, and you know, it's what's interesting, and we're going to be more to tell you the next. Time I'm able to come on with you. They've done nothing but actually mistreat workers since then. They're out to now. They got the strike settled. They're out to bust them. So we recently had a couple of union activists fired out. They've been disciplining. Generally, they're disciplining the folks who are favorable to the union or who helped lead the I'll have a little bit more to report to you. So labor relations have not been good at the Red Cross, and we're about to probably do publicly.
So we need to talk more about that so that people are aware of those kinds of things. They think of that
people think about that
as something that happened a long time ago. They can't picture that it's happening now.
And there's
right.
And we don't see any follow-up in the news anywhere on these issues and radio.
Right.
It's like
everything stops in the mainstream news. We had the catastrophe out in out west with the homes killing, and we have the Olympics. It's like there's nothing else. That's all the mainstream media pays attention to.
And Syria. That's about all you're hearing about.
Bread and circuses, baby. Keep the bread and circuses coming, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, three-ring circus. That's right.
Hey, I apologize. I am driving back into Farmington, and I'm going to lose you in about 2 minutes, I can guarantee you.
Well, thank you very much for being on, and it was great of you to call us.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it, and hope to talk to you next month.
Oh, good. We'll look forward to it.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Take care, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was Larry Dorman,
about
Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Union, talking to us about union issues here in Connecticut and nationwide.
And next
month when he comes on, he's going to fill us in a little bit more, he said, about the Red Cross and what's happening with them.
Yeah.
How they're targeting activists and how they're mistreating employees. You know, I never thought the Red Cross was like that.
Oh, I did. I learned that in the 70s. Neighbors of mine were Red Cross drivers, and they when they went on strike back then in the 70s, I think it was in the early 70s, 72 or 73, and they told me all of the things that were going on there and the treatment that they were getting from the Red Cross, as well as the Red Cross, the chairman of the Red Cross then was making $500,000, $500,000 a year.
In
73, I think it was. And I mean, they're making several million now, I'm sure. But, you know, that most of the donations that you give to the Red Cross, most of the blood is sold to the pharmaceutical companies, all right? You know, you give
me... It doesn't go to hospitals.
Some of it does. It gets processed and then goes through. But the majority, the vast majority of the blood goes to, as bought by the pharmaceutical companies, that are like $100 or more a bag, you know.
Wow.
And I'm sure it's more now, right? But that's the amazing thing, that people don't realize how crooked the damn Red Cross really is. You know, they're like vampires, all right? And they're taking the blood for free, you know, infecting people, you know, putting, you know, treating their workers like crap, right? And then taking that and selling it to pharmaceutical companies who are, you know, raping in massive profits, right? So, and for them to be doing that to their workers is just
an unconscionable
because of safety organization without a conscience.
This, I think, is a very interesting article.
It's not union related, but it is.
It's people related. Let's think
it's
about
definitely this. Definitely an unusual article, and I wanted to talk about this tonight. Scientists prove DNA can be reprogrammed by words and frequencies.
Let's go to the main article here.
But
it's people related, and.
But it's amazing how we were talking about the news. We were talking about how people are manipulated by news and manipulated by
sound and words.
Yeah.
This is from Before It's News by Zen Gardner. Human DNA is a biological internet and superior in many aspects to the artificial one. Russian scientific research directly or indirectly explains phenomena such as clairvoyance, intuition, spontaneous and remote acts of healing, self-healing, affirmation techniques, unusual light auras around people, mind's influence on weather patterns, and much more. In addition, there is evidence for a whole new type of medicine in which DNA can be influenced and reprogrammed by words and frequencies without cutting out and replacing a single gene. Only 10% of our DNA is being used for building proteins. It is the subset of DNA that is of interest to Western researchers and is being examined and categorized. The other 90% are considered junk DNA. The Russian researchers, however, convinced that nature was not dumb, joined linguistics and geneticists in a venture to explore the 90% of junk DNA. Their results, findings, and conclusions are simply revolutionary. According to them, our DNA is not only responsible for the construction of our body, but also serves as data storage and in communication. The Russian linguists found that the genetic code, especially in the apparently useless 90%, follows the same rules as all our human languages. To this end, they compared the rules of syntax, the way in which words are put together to form phrases and sentences, semantics, the study of meaning and language forms, and the basic rules of grammar. They found that the alkalines of our DNA follow a regular grammar and do have set rules just like our languages. So human languages do not appear coincidentally, but are a reflection of our inherent DNA. That's kind of interesting.
The Russian biophysicist and molecular biologist Gargejev, okay, and his colleagues also explore the vibrational behavior of the DNA. For the sake of brevity, I will give you only a summary here. For further exploration, please refer to the appendix at the end of this article. The bottom line was living chromosomes function like solitonic
holographic
computers using the
endogenous DNA laser radiation.
Thank you for help. This means that they managed, for example, to modulate certain frequency patterns onto a laser array and with it influence the DNA frequency and thus the genetic information itself. Since the basic structure of DNA alkaline pairs and of language, as explained earlier, are of the same structure, no DNA coding is necessary.
Well, you can relate that to the Bible. What does it say in Genesis?
I don't know.
In the beginning, there was the Word.
That's correct. That's right. One can simply use words and sentences of the human language. This, too, was experimentally proven. And living DNA substances, or substance in living tissue, not in vitro, will always react to language-modulated laser rays and even to radio waves if the proper frequencies are being used. This finally and scientifically explains why affirmations, autogenous training, hypnosis, and the like can have such strong effects on humans and their bodies. It is entirely normal and natural for our DNA to react to language. While Western researchers cut single genes from the DNA strands and insert them elsewhere, the Russians enthusiastically worked on devices that can influence the cellular metabolism through suitable modulated radio and light frequencies and thus repair genetic defects.
The GGF's research group succeeded in proving that with this method, chromosomes damaged by X-rays, for example, can be repaired. They even captured information patterns of a particular DNA and transmitted it on to another, thus reprogramming cells to another genome. So they successfully transformed, for example, frog embryos to salamander embryos simply by transmitting the DNA information patterns. This way, the entire information was transmitted without any of the side effects of disharmonies encountered when cutting out and reintroducing single genes from the DNA. This represents an unbelievable world-transforming revolution and cessation. All this by simply applying vibration and language instead of the archaic cutting-out procedure. This experiment points to the immense power of wave genetics, which obviously has a greater influence on the formation of organisms than the biochemical processes of alkaline sequences. Esoteric and spiritual teachers have known for ages that our body is programmable by language, words, and thought. This has now been scientifically proven and explained. Of course, the frequency has to be correct, and this is why not everybody is equally successful or can do it with always the same strength. The individual person must work on the inner processes and maturity in order to establish a conscious communication with the DNA. The Russian researchers work on a method that is not dependent on these factors, but will always work, provided one uses the correct frequency. But the higher developed an individual's consciousness is, the less need is there for any type of device. One can achieve these results by oneself, and science will finally stop to laugh at such ideas and will confirm and explain the results. It doesn't end there. The Russian scientists also found out that our DNA can cause disturbing patterns in the vacuum, thus producing magnetized wormholes. Wormholes are the microscopic equivalent of the so-called Einstein-Rosen bridges in the vicinity of black holes left by burned-out stars. They are tunnel connections between entirely different areas in the universe through which information can be transmitted outside of space and time. The DNA attracts these bits of information and passes them on to our consciousness. This process of hypercommunication is more effective in the state of relaxation. Stress, worries, or hyperactive intellect prevents successful hypercommunication, or the information will be totally distorted and useless.
But the fascinating thing is, and have we known this, in fact, there was a famous experiment done by a Japanese scientist who wrote... Who experimented with three glasses of water.
Right.
All right, and he wrote a vulgar statement on one, the word no on another, and the word yes on another, I believe it was something like that. And he placed those pages over a glass of water.
On the top.
On the top of a glasses of water. And he found that it was the same water, from the same tap, from the same water source. But what happened is the structure of the molecular structure of the water started to deteriorate under the vulgar term, and was negative, had negative aspects in under no, and started and was emitting positive reactions, all right, under the yes, all right, under the positive term. And it shows that the word, even the written word, okay, can have
an effect
on cells.
And on molecules.
On molecules,
On molecules.
So that was an amazing experiment, an internationally famous experiment. And but it tells you, and this is a follow-up kind of a study, that shows that what we're saying, or what is said, has a great effect on the consciousness of people, you know.
It actually affects your structure.
It affects your DNA. That's amazing.
Yeah, affects who you are.
It's totally amazing. So anyway, I don't know. I have to.
I found that very interesting.
Yeah, it was really quite bizarre. And we got a few minutes left, and I wanted to. This is a 3-minute video.
This is something that everybody should know.
This is Tim Geithner purposefully, I'm sorry, hid the AIG backdoor bailouts from American taxpayers. Now, you know, this gets kind of down dirty, you know. And this is Daryl Issa, a Republican of California, in an interview, and I think it's worth listening to. Let's go with that. It's a Bloomberg report.
Daryl Issa, a Republican from California, ranking member of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He joins us now by phone, from San Diego. Congressman Issa, great to have you with us. Basically,
well, thanks for having me back on.
You bet. Those emails say to you what? That Timothy Geithner has to go?
That Timothy Geithner has deceived the public during the crisis, has led to at least $100 billion of additional cost to the taxpayers because he paid 100 cents on the dollar for something that at most was worth 30 or 40 cents on the dollar, and he covered it up.
Isn't it possible, though, that the Fed advice was appropriate? You've heard from Timothy Geithner. A Fed member, Don Cohn, has also come and said out that some of this needed to be held, you know, back. Isn't it possible, though, that what the New York Fed was doing was appropriate?
It is not possible. It's never possible to say you had to do something in secret that cost the American taxpayers 100 cents on the dollar. And, in fact, if the public had known, they would have said, why wouldn't you pay the street market price? Some of the people who were made whole had bought those assets at a discount and, as a result, actually made a gain. In a fair market, you don't pay what General Motors stock was worth a year ago. If today you're bailing them out, you pay what they're worth today. Geithner hid that. And as a result, the AIGFP paid out 100 cents on the dollar when, in fact, without the government, this would have unwound for a fraction of that amount.
Well, and in fact, as Bloomberg has reported, it was the case that a lot of those contracts had already been negotiated down to a discount. Congressman Issa, why do you think that the New York Fed, under the control of Tim Geithner, made the decision to pay those banks out in full?
I've always believed there's too cozy a relationship between these former Goldman Sachs people who were running these organizations, Tim Geithner, Hank Paulson, and others, that they simply were too cozy with their friends getting made whole in the banking community, since it wasn't the bank's money, it wasn't an independent deal, it was a taxpayer's money being paid out.
Congressman Issa, let me ask you, though, is all of this a bit of a Republican witch hunt to basically embarrass Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner into stepping down?
Well, if you call for somebody to step down and you have a valid reason, I suppose you could always call it an attempt to embarrass and have someone step down. I've always felt that Timothy Geithner and Hank Paulson and, to a great extent, Ben Bernanke came to us with false promises of what they were going to spend TARP money for. They were disingenuous about what they intended to do, and they left town with $700 billion of your money and spent it in a way that was not appropriate, considering it wasn't their money and considering much of it did not have to be spent just to stabilize the market. Having said that, Paulson's out of office. Mm-hmm. Bernanke is safely reappointed. But Tim Geithner is sitting there committing new dollars, huge new dollars, and telling us how to reform an industry that
okay.
It's very clear he's too cozy with. So before we let him and others simply redo an industry that they're too cozy with, yes,
okay.
We have to make that point. And I don't see the Democrats making it. I don't
got
even
it.
See the willingness to have oversight by the Democrats.
Congressman, we've got to run. Thank you, though, for some time. Congressman Daryl Issa, obviously joining.
That
made a good point, didn't
it? Yeah, that was a Bloomberg report.
Boy, she rushed him off, didn't she?
Yeah. She running out
didn't
of
want
Bloomberg.
To really hear it.
I'll tell you, though, no, Bloomberg, I give Bloomberg all the
credit. A lot of credit for
because
that.
Because they were the ones that sued to Freedom of Information, to sue the Federal Reserve to find out how much money they actually spent on the TARP programs, as well as how much money they particularly lent, okay, to foreign countries.
Was that revealed?
Was the one that told that found out that they spent trillions, with a T,
of
right?
Our money,
of our money, taxpayer money, American taxpayer money,
all right,
to bail out their Federal Reserve banks, number one, all right, Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays, you know, all these other, as well as countries, all right? And, you know, where we're sitting on $1 trillion debt, all right, you know, deficit, the Federal Reserve
with
is out there, you know,
yeah,
creating U.S. dollars, all right, out of thin air and lending it to the foreign countries. And
where
foreign
all
banks.
Our jobs have
so,
gone,
so
while
so
Americans
I,
are
yeah.
out of work, unemployed,
so,
and
so,
hungry.
So I credit Bloomberg for reporting
for,
that, and they're more of a straight shooting group than the others are.
Well, we've come right to the end of our show. It's 9 o'clock.
Yep.
And
want
to thank
everybody
for being listening to us.
Yeah,
and
we thank Larry Dorman
yep.
very much. Ask me and AFL-CIO and all the unions for the great work they do. And we hope to talk to you tomorrow night. Tomorrow between me, will I talk to you then. Good night.
Good night, folks.